Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the black market when we come back. Hey, are you concerned about your privacy? Well, how much does your government know about you anyway, and how much do you want your government to know about you, government or some business enterprise like Bank of America? Well, you know, your government only knows as much about you as you tell them about yourself. Same thing with business and industry. Everything that government, industry, or business knows about you is because you told them. That's right. You filled out some form. You gave them that information. Now, the Fourth Amendment protects you when your person, houses, papers, and effects. But the Fourth Amendment does not protect you from yourself. Now, can we have privacy in the computer age? Well, you bet we can. Information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. It's knowing how this information is gathered, what information is stored, what information you want to keep personal and private that actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, just keep in mind that no one knows anything about you that you haven't revealed by your own hand or your own mouth. Now, if you'd like to learn more about privacy and privacy issues, why don't you call and ask for my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour program. It's entertaining, informative, it's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. Just call the school at area code 417-273-4967 to order yours. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, click on the email machine, and then send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, in this last program in the series on the black market, we've been talking about the ins and outs and ups and downs of the differences between, or and the differences between, this thing of public business and private business. We Americans, 100 years ago, by and large, all practiced private business. Over the years, we have been persuaded by government and industry that we should get away from private business and go into public business, that we should have social security numbers, business licenses, that we should have bank accounts and credit cards and all the entrapments that go along with this thing called public business, including income tax and capital gains taxes and all. I don't think all these taxes are necessarily good for us. I mean, I'm not opposed to you paying these taxes. I mean, if you want to pay taxes, that's your privilege and your business. You certainly have a right to do that. But there are some businesses that you owe taxes on. For instance, if you don't want to pay property taxes, don't own property. See how simple that is? If you don't want to pay income tax, don't have income. If you don't want to pay the Social Security tax, don't have Social Security. Now somebody's going to come and say, well, I want to work for General Motors. Well, okay, if you want to work for General Motors, you got to have a Social Security number, and you got to pay Social Security tax, and you got to pay income tax. Have you thought about maybe just having a private business without any income, dealing in property? Well, that's a wild new concept. Now, I said last time, I believe it was last time or the time before, that there were 15 of these laws that regulated business. It's 11, not 15, 11. And tonight I'm going to give you these 11 laws from the Bible, from Scripture, that if you would practice these 11 laws and practice private business and stop worshiping and serving the United States of America but serve God in its place under the terms of our original contract with Moses, I think that you people will make a lot more money. And I've told my students over the years, and I've been doing this for 10 years, I should have guessed up the ante, I've said, and I'm going to tell you right now, if you're making less than $100,000 a year, which puts you in the top 5% of income earners, you're wasting your time. I don't believe for a moment that practicing these 11 laws will produce a dime less than $100,000 a year. I can't imagine how it could. Now, I don't make $100,000 a year. I only make $7,200 a year or less because I deal in gold and silver coin denominated in dollars, $20 gold pieces divided by $7,200. Let's just try it. $7,200 is a minimum filing requirement. Divided by $20 double eagle St. Gaudens gold pieces is 360 coins. 360 coins times $430, which is about the last closing spot price, is $154,800 in purchasing power. And that's not taxable because it's under $7,200, so says Title 31, Section 5102 through 5112. Why don't you just check that out? Title 31, that's banks and banking, or coin and coinage, I guess, and it's Section 5102 through 5112. And take a look at that, and let's see what Congress has told us about the differences between these clad coins, silver coins, gold coins, and Federal Reserve Note dollars. They spell it right out there for you in spades. Don't get mad at me now if you didn't know that. So let me tell you first of all what a contract is. A contract contains four elements. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. The Army has a contract. It's called an enlistment contract. Social Security has a contract. They call it an application. When you buy a toaster at Walmart, they give you a warranty card. They call it a warranty. It's actually a contract. You know, there's documents and instruments that you sign that are actually contracts, but we don't call them contracts. We call them something else. A license is a contract. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. And it creates a monopoly. When you join these institutions, it's a monopoly. It's the exact opposite to free enterprise. It's the exact opposite to private business. Now, free enterprise and private business is the kind of business that's operated by Joe, the heroin dealer, or by George, the law school teacher, or by Frank, the farmer, who deals directly in gold coin or silver coin and doesn't deal in commercial paper, doesn't practice usury and interest. So let's take a look here. Let's take a look at number 133. Now, there's 133 titles of law in the scripture. 133 titles, subject matters. In the U.S. Code, there's 50. Now, these 133 titles of law contain 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. God runs the entire universe on less than the traffic code of your state. Your traffic code in your state has 2,000 statutes, and God runs the whole universe on 759. He has a law that says, thou shalt not steal. And he doesn't need more than four words to say what the U.S. government says in all of Title 18 of the U.S. Code. Thou shalt not steal should be able to be summed up easily in Title 18. Now, number 133 deals with an important law. It's called the Sabbath day, and it deals with work. It's against the law for you to work on the Sabbath day. If you work on the Sabbath day, you will not make a lot of money. Sabbath day is on Saturday. It begins at Friday sundown until Saturday sundown, and it's laid out, I think, in Leviticus 23:32. I think it'll tell you, from even until even shall you celebrate your Sabbath. Now, if you want to keep the Sabbath on Friday or Sunday, go ahead. Better that you keep the Sabbath. That's one day a week that you don't work. Now, that's a law. It's a law given to us by God. He said, don't work on the Sabbath. 6 days shall labor be done. Work's to be done 6 days a week. On the seventh day, I don't want to see you out there working. Now, that's backed up by another statute over here in Isaiah 58, verses 13 and 14. Now, here's what God tells you. It says, you know, you practice this law, the work law, number 133, and if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath day, this is verse 13 now, from Isaiah 58, 13, if you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and you call the Sabbath a delight and holy to the eternal, honorable, and if you will honor God, him, that's God, by not doing your own ways, nor kindling, or finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words. Then you shall delight yourself in the eternal. I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the eternal has spoken it. Now that's a contract. It's an offer. You want to accept it? Time frame is forever. And the reciprocity on the contract is, I'll give you all these benefits, you keep my Sabbath. Now there are 33 of these articulable benefits. 33 benefits. Out of these 33 benefits, you're entitled to rain in due season, and such things as, but not limited to, rain in due season, the land shall yield or increase, the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, your stores of goods shall not run out, there will be no famine or shortages, you shall dwell in your land safely, I'll give you peace in the land. You shall have no war in your land. You shall chase your enemies. They shall fall before you by the sword. I'll have respect to you. I'll make you fruitful and multiply you. I will establish my covenant with you. I'll set my tabernacle among you. My soul shall not abhor you. I'll be your God. You be my people. You will be set above all nations on the earth. You shall be blessed in the city, blessed in the fruit of your body. Blessed shall be the fruit of your cattle. Blessed shall you be when you come in. Blessed shall you be when you go out. You'll be blessed in everything you do. That's the Midas touch. And you'll be a holy people unto the eternal. All of the people of the earth will be afraid of you. You shall lend, but not borrow. You shall be the head and not the tail in all that you do. I'll take sickness away from you. 70 years, all of your days shall be fulfilled. You shall inherit the land. You shall gain great wealth, multiplied gold, silver, herds, and flocks. And I will pour you out a blessing that there will not be room enough to receive it, and I'll feed you with the heritage of your father Jacob. Now there's your 33 benefits. Now the first one there was number 133. Now I teach a school here on the Mosaic Law, and in that law school, that particular one, I cover all of these 758 statutes, judgments, and commandments along with the penalties that go along with them. Take a look at wages. Here's another law. If you'll practice this law, it says, you shall not defraud your neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with you all night until the morning. Now, when you work for somebody, they pay you on Friday. Sometimes they'll pay you twice a month. Sometimes they'll pay you once a month. That's against the law. You get paid at the end of every day. And so when somebody comes here to work for me, at the end of every day, I pay him. I pay him in gold coin. I pay him in silver coin. I pay him in some form of substance. It could be wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil. If the guy tells me he wants Federal Reserve notes, I'll give him Federal Reserve notes, or I'll give him Russian rubles, Italian lira, European euros, whatever it is the guy wants to get paid in, I can pay him in that. But it's got to be in substance. And you can't rob the guy. You can't pay him in paper. You got to at least offer the guy substance. Now, if you'll practice that law, God says to you, I will pour you out this blessing and there won't be room enough to receive it. Let's take a look at another one, usury. It's against the law to practice usury. If you lend money to any of my people that is poor by you, then you shall not be to him as a usurer, and neither shall you lay upon him usury. If you at all take your neighbor's raiment to pledge, that's collateral, you shall deliver it again to him by the time that the sun goes down, because that's his covering only. It's his raiment for his skin. Wherein shall he sleep? And it shall come to pass when he cries out to me that I'll hear him, because I'm gracious. And no man shall take the neither or the upper millstone to pledge, because he has taken a man's life to pledge. Banks always require collateral on a note or on a loan. It's against the law to collateralize a note, and it's against the law to charge a percentage or interest on that note, on that loan. So if you won't practice usury, when you work here, I don't charge you interest. If you owe me money, I don't charge interest. Somebody says, well, you have to charge interest or you'll lose money to inflation. I don't lose any money to inflation. I don't do business in dollars. I don't do business in commercial paper. I do business in gold. So when you come to school, you pay me 4.5 ounces of gold. And when I pay you 4, 5, or 10 ounces of gold. We're never concerned about inflation. Inflation doesn't affect gold. Gold protects you from the inflation from paper money. Inflation comes from paper. It doesn't come from gold. And gold isn't measured in dollars. It's measured in silver. And silver isn't measured in dollars, it's measured in gold. Gold is the value, or the way you value silver, and silver is the way you value gold. And that's the way God set it up. Now that's usury. Let's try tithes. Now God told us in Matthew 6, verse 24, that no man can serve two masters. Now, some people tithe and pay tax. Now, you owe one or the other, but you don't owe both. Otherwise, you're serving two masters. The income tax is simply a counterfeit of tithing. Under the tithing statutes, of which there's a number of them, let me count them up here and see how many. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six tithing statutes. And then a number of examples in the scripture. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 examples of how tithing is used in the scripture. There are 3 tithes and 7 holy day offerings, of which the weekly Sabbath is not one of them. On the 7 holy days, you're instructed not to come before the eternal empty. So as you have been blessed, you have to give a holy day offering. There's a first tithe, second tithe, and third tithe. Third tithe is for the widows, orphans, and poor. It's paid once every 3 years, 2 times out of 7, and it's for the purpose of operating the welfare system. We have a welfare system in America. We call it welfare and food stamps and aid to families with dependent children and WIC and Social Security and so on. It's a counterfeit of third tithe, and it takes a whole lot more than 2.33% of your property. Second tithe is your vacation fund. It's for attending the holy days. Today we call that paid vacation. And your boss takes your paid vacation and he uses it interest free for a year, and then he gives it to you. And he tells you what a big favor he's doing to you. He's robbing you of your wages. And then he poses as your benefactor. It's a counterfeit of second tithe. First tithe is a counterfeit. That is, the income tax is a counterfeit of first tithe. The entire government operates, a limited government operates under the laws of God on 10%. Not 10% of the gross, 10% of the net, 10% of your increase, not 10% of your capital. It's 10% of the net profit that comes from your capital. So if we took our whole gross domestic product, synthesized it down, it would be something less than $1 trillion a year that goes to first tithe. And that would run all of the state and the federal governments. Now, I don't pay that income tax because it's a counterfeit of tithing. I pay my tithes first, second, and third. This happens to be 2004, 2005 happens to be third tithe year. So I'm paying that up until Passover of 2005. And then we enter into what's called the year of release. It's another story for another day. This statute here on tithing is very important. John D. Rockefeller tithed, and he made $1 billion as a result of it. John D. Rockefeller practiced a lot of these laws. Now, he was a liar, he was a thief, he was a cheat, and he did a lot of bad, wicked, terrible, awful things. But one of the things that he did, he tithed, and it paid off. Theft, thou shalt not steal. The theft law that says thou shalt not steal is the basis of our property, private property rights. You have to have a law that says thou shalt not steal. The opposite to that is from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, which is what all socialists practice today. So we here in America no longer practice thou shalt not steal, and while you wouldn't think of breaking into your neighbor's house and burglarizing it, you wouldn't think twice about writing a check and stealing somebody's property, substance, with a worthless piece of paper, which isn't even money, it's a promise to pay, or using Federal Reserve notes, or a credit card. And then, we even call these credit cards gold cards. They're not gold, they're plastic. It's like calling a sodomite gay. He's not gay, he's a sodomite. We're getting to the point in America that we are using more doublespeak than we're using language. Let's say what we mean, and let's mean what we say. There is a thing called gold, but it doesn't come from Bank of America, and it doesn't come in the form of a plastic card. Now, God told us, you shall not steal, neither shall you deal falsely, neither lie one to another. You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small. You shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have. Federal Reserve notes are not perfect and just weights, and they're not perfect and just measures. They are a lying instrument of theft, nothing more and nothing less. Government creates them first and steals from you. You turn around and pass it on to the next guy and steal from him. He passes it on to the next guy like the old maid, and we all steal one from another. Now, when we used gold and silver coin in America, in 1933, when Franklin Roosevelt took over, there was a $2 billion national debt. Have you looked at your national debt today? It's $7 trillion. Every time you steal, there's a penalty. The penalty is five times the amount of the theft. Now, we've been stealing for about 72 years. And in that 72 years, we've gone from 2 to 7 trillion. And that 7 trillion is going to double from 7 to 14 very shortly. And the more we steal, the greater the debt will become. The debt is now unserviceable. We're now at the point where we're not going to be able to service this debt. So thou shalt not steal is a very important law to follow. Don't use Federal Reserve notes. Use gold and silver coin. We have gold and silver coin being minted in our country every day by the government. There isn't any need or any use, no excuse any longer for us to use unjust weights and balances. There's every reason for us to use gold and silver coin in our financial transactions. Now, let's take Mr. Chapman over here. Let's suppose that Mr. Chapman says, I want you to pay me $129.95 for my newsletter. Let's take $129.95 and divide that into $430, divided by 130, and that's about 3.3. or about one-third. And so what I need over here is about a third of an ounce of gold, or about, let's price this at three-tenths of an ounce of gold. Now, one-tenth ounce of gold coins are selling for around $40 to $45 each. And if he priced that at $15 in gold coin, $15 in gold coin, instead of $130 in Federal Reserve notes, he would be practicing just weights and balances, and at the very same time, he would be reducing his income tax liability from $130 down to $15, and there's a whole lot more $15 bills in $7,200. Let's try it. $7,200 divided by 15 is 480 subscribers. On the other hand, if he's got $7,200, divided by 130, he's only got room for 55 subscribers. So he can have more subscribers before he has to file a tax return. And then furthermore, I don't think that there's a tax on the gold, because I think it's property, and I don't think property is assessable or taxable. I haven't seen any cases decided by the Supreme Court, but I certainly think that it would be worth taking up to get a policy decision on the taxes due under Title 31, Section 5112. Do you owe the tax on the dollars that are generated, or do you owe a tax on the value which is computed in Federal Reserve note dollars. I think that the former is the correct answer. Now let's take a look at just weights and balances. Excuse me. I just did that one, didn't I? No, I didn't either. I was talking about theft, just weights and balances. Now there's an actual statute here, just weights and balances, in Leviticus 19:35 and 36 and Deuteronomy 25:13 through 16. It's the extrapolation of the theft law. You shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. You shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in metered, or in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin shall you have. I am the Eternal your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. Strict liability, chapter 115. Strict liability deals with the opposite to insurance. Everybody's practicing insurance. That's what these hedge funds are. They're just insurance. Limited liability. The ultimate end of it is that there will be a financial collapse in derivatives. Derivatives, in reality, is a bet. We've decided to go into gambling in a big way. I noticed that Chapman, I think it was the other day, or Magombo or somebody, said that the derivatives bubble is out at $200 trillion worldwide. I don't think anybody really knows, but it's a bundle of money. More money than the world is worth. If you're going to measure it in dollars and then go out and buy, sell, and trade everything that's in it, where would you get the money to buy it? There isn't enough gold or silver out there to buy it at $430. I mean, there's a few billion dollars, maybe even a few trillion out there, but you don't have the wherewithal to price it at that kind of a number and then go out and pay it. We've got all that paper out there, but no way to buy it or pay it back. That's what makes the inflation. That's what makes the insolvency. The world is insolvent, bottom line. Now, I don't buy insurance. I don't have homeowners insurance or fire insurance. I don't have auto insurance, health insurance. Why would I buy health insurance? It costs $9,000 a year and I don't get sick. Somebody says, well, wait a minute, you never know when you're going to get sick. Oh, yeah, you do. You do. If you're going to eat fat, blood, or crocodile, shellfish, and alligators, you need health insurance. I don't deny it. If you're going to eat Oreo cookies and drink soda pop, use a lot of refined sugar and refined flour, you need health insurance. I'll be right there to tell you that. Because you're going to get sick. Now, if you'll obey the 18 health laws in the scripture, you won't get sick. And I do that. And I don't get sick, saves me $9,000 a year. God told you that he would lay none of these diseases upon you that he laid upon the Egyptians. You'll see that in Exodus 15, verse 26. When you get sick, it's the penalty that you pay for the violation of one or more of the health laws of Scripture. There's no other way for you to get sick. Can't happen. Sickness comes from two sources. It's either a nutritional deficiency, you're starving to death, or poison. That's toxicity. One or the other, or a combination of the two. If you're toxic or poisoned, there are herbs that you can take to detoxify. And if you're starving to death and you're nutritionally deficient, there are other herbs and medicines that you can take that are natural, not drugs, just herbs and medicines, foods, that will put back into your body the vitamin C that will replace the scurvy symptoms. What you need is vitamins and minerals. Every disease is caused by either toxic, that is poison, or a starvation condition, or a combination of the two. Stop doing that. Don't poison yourself with white sugar, which is a drug. And do indeed feed yourself lots of vitamin C. Now you don't need health insurance. So simple that is. Now strict liability is insurance. And strict liability is prohibited in the scripture, particularly in Exodus 21:28 through 36. It gives you the story. Here's what I'm just going to short circuit a little bit and tell you how that works. I was in court one day and the judge asked me, he said, do you have auto insurance? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, well, you're in violation of the Financial Responsibility Act of Missouri of 1976. And I said, no, I'm not. I practice strict liability under the First Amendment pursuant to Seeger versus U.S. under Public Law 97-280. And the judge looked at me like I'd hit him across the face with a slippery, slimy fish. And he said to me, "Well, Mr. Gordon, if you had an accident, how would you pay the damages?" And I said, "With gold." And he said, "But Mr. Gordon, what if the amount of the accident was more gold than you had? How would you handle that?" And I said, "In that case, Judge, you would rather bore a hole through my right ear and sell me to the aggrieved party under the negligence statute." Which is just exactly correct. Sell me into bond servitude. Every man drawing breath has the money to pay his debts, or he can work them off to the land Sabbath or the Jubilee. Now, we used to practice that in America until Abraham Lincoln created what's known as the Emancipation Proclamation, which was formally converted into the 13th Amendment. Now, it's not my fault that you people have abolished your bondservant statute and replaced it with insurance or limited liability. But limited liability is your problem. And the reason that you have the government interfering in your rights, privileges, and immunities is because you're not responsible for your own actions. The insurance company is. So the insurance company, who is now your guardian, responsible for your actions, goes to the legislature and says, "We need a seatbelt law. These fools, these ignorants, these incompetents are driving around fully insured and are not wearing their seatbelts. And when they have accidents, they go through the windshields. And when they do, it costs us a lot more money at the claims window. Therefore, we pay less taxes and the government is harmed thereby." And that's why you have insurance, and that's why you have a seatbelt law. Before we had auto insurance, we didn't have a seatbelt law. And all of these laws, rules, and regulations are there to protect the claims window of the insurance industry. And the highway patrolman who's out there is not there to protect you. He's there to protect the claims window of the insurance industry, paid for by you through your government taxes. And that's the way that game is played. Well, let me give you a reminder here. This is the halfway point in the program. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, just go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And remember, too, that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent, although they ought to, but they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of the network of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Get your pen and paper out there. I'll do it one more time. georgegordon.org, that's an easy one. Or you can call us direct, 417-273-4967. Be sure to order your free general law CD package. This is the seventh program in a series called The Black Market. The Black Market comes from the Bible. It's called free enterprise, free market, supply and demand, or the underground economy, commonly known as the Black Market. Just like the Bible is banned from our public schools, okay? Well, we call the free market the Black Market. Gives it a bad connotation. That's to make you shun it. You shouldn't want to deal in the black market. God, that's the black market. Yeah, that's where free enterprise works. That's where supply and demand works. That's where great increase and gain are located. There's another law here called the inheritance law. I have that in chapter 61 of the Mosaic Law, which has all of the statutes, all of the penalties, and all of the laws concerning inheritance. And under the inheritance law, I'll tell you a little story over here, you and I are the inheritors, the heirs of God. Here's the way the deal came down. About 1327 B.C., a guy by the name of Moses walked up on top of Mount Sinai and received the Ten Commandments and a parchment that contained, well, he didn't receive a parchment, he received the law, and then he later wrote it and put it in parchment and put it in the Ark of the Covenant. It contained 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. God talked to the people right off the mountain. He has a very loud voice so that no one could miss what he said. He said, "Watch my lips and listen up." And it just scared the living hell out of everybody. And the people came to Moses and said, "Moses, don't let that God talk to us again. He just scares the hell out of all of us. What you do is you go up on the mountain and be our representative." This is the beginning of representative government in Israel. That's why we have it today. We're still practicing representative government. It's got a couple of little twists and turns in there that don't belong there, but that's why Dianne Feinstein is sitting there making your law. And so Moses came down off the mountain. He says, "Okay, I got this directly from God. Now, here's what God is pitching. He's pitching this deal to you. And the deal was, you practice these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and I'm going to give you these 33 articulable benefits." And the people thought it was a pretty good deal. So they said, "All that the Eternal has said, we will do, and we will be obedient." They said that in Exodus 24:8. Believe it or not. Exodus 24:8. So you have here an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. That's called a contract, and in biblical terms, it's called the Old Covenant. And that Old Covenant is recorded in Exodus 19, verse 16, through Exodus 24, verse 8. There's the terms and conditions of the contract. Now go ask your preacher to put his finger on the Old Covenant contract, and I'll just bet you a dime to donuts that he can't do it. These people don't deal in law, they deal in religion. And they deal in double speak and double cross and double talk. But anyway, I call them pulpit parrots, you call them preachers and father. Now there's the terms and conditions of the contract. Now these terms and conditions had a lot of benefits that went along with them. We call them bennies, benefits. When you get these, you know, health insurance and dental plans and stuff from your unit, we call them benefits. Well, these bennies that God gave us, 33 of them, amounted to a lot of wealth. And this contract was entered into by two people who were unequal. God, who has eternal life, and your great-great-granddaddy 84 generations ago, who died. And this raises a legal question. The question is, when great-great-granddaddy died, who gets the toys? Do they go back to God? No, that would violate thou shalt not steal. So God gave us an inheritance law. And under the inheritance law, all of those toys go to the heirs and assigns forever. Now that brings us up to 2005, 84 generations later. You people out there in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England, and Western Europe are the heirs and assigns forever. You're entitled to these benefits. You don't have to do anything for them. That's what an inheritance is all about. But in order for you to collect the inheritance, you have to specifically perform under the terms and conditions of the last will and testament, which is this contract. You have to perform on these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. And if you'll do that, then you'll get these benefits. Now let's take the tithing law. Remember I said you got to tithe? All right, now let's take a look at Malachi chapter 4, verse 8. I'll just read you a couple, three, of the terms and conditions of here's how you collect these benefits. Verse 8 says, this is Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament. "Will a man rob God? Yet you have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation. bring you all of the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house. And prove me now herewith, saith the Eternal of Hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven, and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, and neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, says the Eternal. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a delightsome land, says the Eternal of Hosts. We are no longer that delightsome land. We're $7 trillion in debt. Besides that, we can't pay our balance of payments deficit. And on top of that, we have rain that does not come in due season. We're suffering from droughts and floods. 23 inches of rain in Los Angeles. Ah, come on, guys. You people out in Los Angeles now, let's wake up and get real. God told you now in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26 that he'd turn your heaven to iron, your earth to brass, that he'd make it rain here and make it drought there. Now that's what you're suffering from. You're not participating in, you're not performing on the terms and conditions of the contract, and now you're getting the penal clause from Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. So let's wake up to reality. I said, I'll pour you out a blessing and there won't be room enough to receive it. Now, if you want to make money, you have to perform on the terms and conditions of the old covenant contract. Now, if you just want to work, if you just want jobs, 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 and if you want to participate in a guardian ward relationship in which somebody tells you when to get up, when to go to bed, and what to do in between, you're doing it just right, right now. Whatever it is that you're doing is what you want to continue doing. Now, if you want to get wealthy, if you want to make money, if you want to be the head and not the tail, then you got to do something a little different. Now, you're entitled to great wealth, but you're entitled to great wealth under the terms and conditions of the contract. Not the contract of the Labor Department, not the contract of Social Security. It's the contract that we entered into with your great-great-granddaddy, which makes you an heir and an assigned forever. Now, if you want to participate in that program, it's a choice that you make. And if you don't want it, let it lay. If you want it, then get off your ass and let's go to work. And I'll show you how to do that. Hired servants. Now, there are some laws here that deal with hired servants. A foreigner and a hired servant shall not eat thereof. This is in Exodus 12:45. These Mexican immigrants that come in shall not eat of the Passover. Leviticus 19:13, you shall not defraud your neighbor, neither rob him the wages of him that is hired shall not abide with you all night until the morning. And there shall no stranger eat of the holy thing. A sojourner of a priest or a hired servant shall not eat of the holy thing. If your brother is a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, and he's sold unto you, and serves you 6 years, in the seventh year he shall be free unbought. Now we practice that to this day in the military. So you can only join the army for 6 years. And everybody that joins the military joins for 6 years. But in the seventh year you have to be free unbought. So you have to re-enlist. So you go in and you enlist. You serve 2 years active, 2 years reserve, and 2 years... what do you call that? It's reserve, but it's non-service. Now, some of you guys out there are still in the Army. You joined up 2 years ago. You served your 2 years, and now you're over here complaining because they're going to call you back up. You were always in there for 6 years. Now, go back and look at your enlistment contract. I've been watching the news over here, and I don't think some of you people understand the bondservant statute. He comes under hired servants. Now, it's true that Hebrews can't be held to serve longer than 7 years. And then some of you guys became officers in the Army. There was a guy the other day who was 70 years old, 73, I think. He's a surgeon, some kind of a special surgeon, retired, been retired for a number of years, lives down in Florida. The Army called him up and they said, we're going to send you off to Afghanistan. I think he was a captain, colonel, major, something like that. And the guy wasn't mad about it. He says, you know, I'm a soldier, and I understand that and understand the law. I'm an officer with a commission signed by the President of the United States. An officer in the military in the United States is an officer for life. You can be called to active duty at age 95 or 110. So all of you officers out there, sit down and shut up. You may be called up anytime. You agreed to it when you became an officer. Now, the enlisted men, that's another story, but when you enlisted for 6 years. And you're going to have to fulfill your 6 years of military service. Now, there's an example of it. It's called the Hired Servants, Chapter 54 in my Mosaic Law School. And there's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 statutes that deal here with hired servants, of which military service is just one example. But when you join up with Social Security and take a job at Microsoft, that's a guardian ward relationship, and you need to fulfill and participate in and perform on all the terms and conditions that your master sets down for you. And your master is the Congress of the United States, and they set those down. For instance, Social Security is spelled out in spades in Title 42, Section 301 through 335. Now, there's your Social Security contract. Read it and weep. Now, if you want to get out of it, that's another story for another day. Then we have bribes, gifts, and rewards. It's against the law to take a gift. Now, I remember one time, I tell you a little story here. There was an insurance company there in Oakland, California, and they handled most of the fire damage there. Now, fires are pretty lucrative contracts for little contractors like me. Typical kitchen fire, you know, is $15,000 or so. Geez, back in the 60s and 70s, you know, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 was a pretty good contract for a little guy. Two guys go in there and knock that kitchen out in 30 days and make $15,000, pretty good. So the moral to the story was that in order to get those fire contracts, you had to pay a kickback to the claims adjuster of the insurance company. Yeah, they're on the take, they get bribes. I mean, it's either that or you don't get the contracts. Well, I went to my insurance broker, and I told him that I would like to bid on those, and so he told me, that's fine, no problem. And he put me in contact with a couple of guys, and he said, you have to be prepared to pay the kickback. Now, of course, in 2005, these kickbacks are pretty common. They're common in government now. There was a time in America when a bribe, a gift, was looked upon with horror. Today, you have lobbying firms in Washington that pay your representatives for whatever laws they want passed. That's what all these campaign contributions are all about. Those are bribes. Campaign contributions violate this statute. You shall take no gift, for the gift blinds the wise and perverts the words of the righteous. For the eternal your God is a God of gods and a Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and a terrible, which regards not persons nor taketh reward. You can't bribe God. He doesn't take money. And in Deuteronomy 16, he says, judges and officers shall you make you in all of your gates, which the eternal your God gives you, and throughout your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not wrest judgment. You shall not respect persons, neither take a gift, for a gift does blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous. That which is altogether just shall you follow, that you may live and inherit the land where the eternal your God, or that the law eternal gives you. Now, we've turned America into a nation of bribe takers. We're bribe givers and bribe takers. And these big multinational corporations give bribes to political office holders who take those bribes. And then they say, well, if we didn't take those campaign contributions, we couldn't get elected. That's probably true. And you should not be elected. Because if you had to take the bribe to get it done, then you're a criminal. And of course, almost all of our elected officers are taking these gifts and bribes, so you ought to be at least aware of the fact that it's against the law. We don't practice that. These laws that I'm telling you here tonight, I don't practice those. And it's true, there are some of these business deals that I can't participate in. But it doesn't harm me any. I don't have a problem making a living. I don't have a problem making deals, dealing in just weights and balances. Thou shalt not steal. I deal in gold and silver. the United States government mints gold and silver coin. There's plenty of it out there for us to do business in. The last one, number 11 here, is called credit. Chapter 26 in my Mosaic Law School. You shall not lend upon usury to your brother, usury of money, usury of victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury. Unto a stranger you may lend upon usury, but unto your brother you shall not lend upon usury, that the Eternal your God may bless you in all of that you set your hand to do in the land where you go in to possess it. And no man shall take the neither or the upper millstone to pledge, for he takes a man's life to pledge. Now these are credit statutes as well as usury statutes. Actually, these statutes are overlapping in both usury and credit. But listen to this. The land shall not be sold forever. This is Leviticus 25, 23 through 54. The land shall not be sold forever because the land is mine and you're strangers and sojourners with me. And if a man sells a dwelling house in a walled city, then he may redeem it within a whole year after it's sold. Within a full year he may redeem it. And if he be not redeemed within the space of a full year, then the house that's in the walled city shall be established forever to him that bought it throughout his generations. It shall not go out in a jubilee. All right, a couple of important business notes here. It's against the law to buy and sell land. That's why real estate brokers are licensed. That's because buying and selling land is against the law. So real estate brokers go to the state, and the state licenses them to break that law. They need permission from a sovereign authority to do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. They want to violate the law of God, so they go to the state and get a license to do that. But we ought not to do that just because they do. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't buy and sell land, but you have to do it privately. And then, if you're going to sell a house in a walled city, now if you're going to sell it in the city limits, you can do that. And then we've got the year of redemption. You know, we still practice that in our real estate law. A year of redemption, you don't pay your taxes, they don't take your house away from you the first year, the second year, the third year, and you have a full year to redeem it. All right, so if you're going to buy and sell land, let's suppose you wanted to remove your inheritance from California and move here to Missouri. You can sell your land. That's why gold is called portable land. You sell your land, convert it to gold, bind it up in your hand, and come to Missouri and spend the money on land here. But in no case could you sell land, make a profit, and then go out and buy a new car. You can buy land, you can improve your land, but you can't make merchandise of your inheritance, and that's what the land is. It's our inheritance. And so what have we done with it? Well, we went out and made merchandise of it. We buy it, and we sell it, and we trade it. Hell, the Japanese come over here and buy our lands. You got the Chinese in America buying your land. What's that all about? Do you think selling your inheritance to these foreigners and aliens is a good public policy? Does that make any sense to you? And then you got the United States government, a corporation over here, claiming that they own all the public land, which is about one-third of all the land in the country. You think that's good public policy? So there are land laws, and there are credit laws. There are taxing laws, and these laws God told us to practice. He said, I want you to practice this law. There's 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments organized into 133 titles, subject matters, and I want you to practice this law. And if you'll do that, I'll pour you out a blessing that you won't have room to receive it. Now, I've never run into somebody that had such a blessing that he didn't have room to receive it until you come here to my farm. And then I want you to look on my porch, and I want you to look in my yards, and I want you to see all the stuff that I've got and how it's piled up and it's in the way. I have had poured out upon me a blessing that there isn't room to receive it all. And then the rust and the moth comes in and devours it. Well, that's all right with me. I mean, if you got more than you can handle. You know, I've got a gallon of cream up in my refrigerator, and I always measure a man's wealth by how much cream he has in the refrigerator. Of course, here in the Ozarks, we also measure wealth in two other ways. That is, how many cars do you have jacked up on blocks in your yard, and how many washing machines do you have on the porch? That's another way that we test a man's wealth here in the Ozarks. Now, wherever you live, I've never run across very many people. I haven't seen anybody yet that said, wait a minute, I've got so much wealth that I don't have any more room to put it, so don't give me any more. Shut it off. Ah, it's all right. You go ahead and send me something. I'll find a place to put it. And I got a bunch of it. And you ought to have a bunch of it, too. And your wealth ought not to be in so much worthless paper. It ought to be in something that makes sense, like property. Let me see if I've got an ad here that deals with this thing called property. I think I got one here. I got a little story here to tell you. We Americans are paying up to 74% of everything that we create and produce now in taxes. 14 taxes. We live in mortgaged homes owned by savings and loan companies. We drive cars owned by GMAC or Ford Motor Finance. The average family of four in America has a $70,000 consumer debt. We owe a $7 trillion national debt. We're surety for another $44 trillion of unfunded government obligations. Our financial institutions are leveraged out to $60 trillion. Now that's America. Worldwide. And our Social Security retirement system is a chain letter Ponzi scheme. We live from paycheck to paycheck, and we've been taught to call all of that prosperity. You call that prosperity? Now, I would say that we probably ought to concentrate on can we deal in more and more property? Can we deal in more and more real wealth? Not the worthless paper that we're being given. Federal Reserve notes amounts to just so much worthless paper. And mortgages on your homes and leverages and ARM, when they call that average something mortgage, that's those variable rate mortgages, and leveraged real estate transactions. You know, when you buy a piece of property, if you go out there and buy it and pay for it and pay cash, you'll own it. And nobody will take it away from you. Well, in all likelihood, they won't take it away from you. I know it's a wild new scheme, but if you practice these laws, you develop wealth. If you don't, you can't develop wealth. That doesn't mean that nobody develops wealth, but hey, wait a minute. You take a look at the number of wealthy people in the country, and that's what everybody's complaining about, that you've got more and more money going to fewer and fewer hands at the high end of the spectrum. More and more people making $50 million a year salaries and bonuses, and fewer people at the lower end making money. Don't you think we ought to reverse that? And you people down here at the lower end, if you want to make more money, may I suggest the black market? Yeah, that's right. I think if you'll practice the black market, you'll be practicing the law of God, the free market, the supply and demand market, the underground economy, and I think you'll do a lot better. All right, we're about out of time. I got to leave it right there. Give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to that homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. There's the signal. Time's up. I've got to leave it. We'll see you right here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing. Thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.